Really remarkably good little.
But, yeah, I decided, somebody else told me, says, why do you want to go ahead and do it in 1 year? He says, you'll start paying taxes on it. They said you can go to the regular Homestead Act of 3 years, then you have to clear so much land and have 20 acres under cultivation at the end of 3 years, live in your cabin 7 months out of every year, and then you don't pay taxes until afterwards. So I went ahead and took the 3 years on mine, and that's when I was raising oats, mostly then. And then 1 or 2 years I raised potatoes. 1 year I had 60 ton. It was quite a batch of potatoes to handle.
Yes, I'm sure. What did you do with your hay? Who was buying hay?
There was just a few people had horses and a few people had cows just to have milk. And,
there was a little dairying going on then, though, wasn't there?
Yeah, Funk's had a dairy over there at that time. Well, then when they came back in the country again, they started the dairy down here.
Yeah. So that'll be enough of a market right there.
Of course, Kramer's was still in business. The Bentley dairy had shut down by then. It was still in operation when I came in the 40s.
Experiment station director added a small dairy.
Gasser?
Who?
Gasser?
No.
They had a small dairy at the experimental farm.
Right.
But they raised most all their own stuff. I don't think they bought any, maybe.
They bought a little bit of hay.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I knew that they bought. But this guy ran his own dairy.
Oh, over on Badger Slough?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I know who you were thinking of, but I can't come up with the name.
Mm.
Yeah, he had a pretty good size dairy. And he was still
a World War II trainer airplane. I flew with him down in Kenai.
And he's still over there.
What was his name?
Well, oats, you didn't have to worry. I'm thinking, remembering that we had barley and it had to be dried. It was hard to get it dried.
It took a little longer to mature than the oats did. The oats came on quicker and were ready to cut earlier, so you had better weather for drying it. Otherwise, if it was too green when you cut it and stacked it, why then it would just mildew and burn sometimes.
Yeah. Well, Ed Kosolik had some kind of a dryer. What did he have that you used 1 year?
I used Ed Kosolik's grinder.
Oh, that's what
it was. The experiment station put a new floor in with floor heat.
Oh, that's right.
And the thing dried at the same time that I was looking desperately for some way to dry the barley out. And they let me borrow the floor for 2 days.
Oh.
And I'd put about 6 inches of barley all over the floor, and then we'd come down and turn it over with a shovel. And
then was it Dornath or somebody did get a grain dryer in that 1 year?
Could have been Dornath, but I wasn't aware of it at the time.
Yeah.
We'd probably given up on barley. Yeah. Well, our farmer
would like. I only tried barley 1 or 2 years, and I ended up binding it in bundles, and then I just sold it that way. I didn't thrash it out.
That would have been a good idea. Well, that reminds me of Charlie Ward, since he's the one that did our little bit of farming. Any idea when they showed up?
Let's see, they came over It would have to be in the early 50s.
Well, and who? Oh, well, that's right. They did.
I'm trying to remember when that fire was over there.
Oh,
yes.
It
burned the. We moved out here in 58.
Yeah.
And it burned, I think, the summer before.
57?
So it was either 56 or 57.
Yeah, well, Ward's, that was what started it. They were clearing land and burning brush piles.
Oh, okay.
Here I've been blaming
Bob Strait
all these years for that.
No, I don't think it started at his place. I think it started in those brush piles of Charlie Ward's.
Well, Bob Strait's another early one out there, though.
Yeah, well, he got out of the Army about the same time I did. We both were in Ladd Field here together. And let's see, whose cat was it we had out there on that fire? The fellow from out on Farmer's Loop Road, had the D9, Paul Albert.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought it out there, and so he asked me if I knew anything about the country there, and I said, yeah, I'd been all over it. He says, well, get on the cat with this guy and tell him what to look out for. So we got on that thing and started making a fire line, and we got over on top of the ridge and down on the north side. I said, we got to watch out for our old mine shafts over here. There's quite a few of them along that back side.
Small wood.
Yeah. And so there was just scrub brush mostly and stunted tamarack and small spruce. And I says, there's a mine shaft right over there. We got to stay clear of that. And I said, you just got to keep your eye open in the brush here to look for those spots. And so we dropped the blade and started down the hill, and all of a sudden we could see stuff 20, 30 feet on either side of us going downhill. We were on solid ice. There was about 6 or 8 inches of moss and stuff, and everything under was just ice. And we started down that hill, and we cleared a spot, must have been 100 feet wide, down to the bottom of the hill. No way you could get back up. We had to go back up around the draw and get back up on top again. But we made a fire break.
The quick way, I gather.
Yeah.
What was the year that Paul Albert dropped his D9
in the
lake?
Lake over here. Yeah, he had some kid from California running that, and he was going back. I forget where he'd been clearing over here somewhere. Whose
what
property?
Lake? What lake did he go?
Pond.
Yeah, it was a pond down from Steel Creek. Let's see. Where are we? At Davis. And where was Yoder's?
They show a couple of ponds over here. Oh, that must be Camp Lewa.
Yeah, that's farther over.
Yeah.
Steel Creek here. And we came in on Yoder's Road to get down to it, so it must have been right in here somewhere. But he was coming back over here, and he says, well, this is a nice open spot, just cut across there. He thought it was an open field. It was a pond that wasn't frozen too good.
Well, I've never heard about that.
Yeah. I went down there a couple of times. And they had quite a time getting that out of there.
I would think so.
But then Ward brought a used dozer from, he was working as a salesman at the NC company. And they brought a Alice Chalmers tractor out. And he says, get on it and start making fire lines. So I spent a day or so on that one making fire line over there and pushing burning stuff back in. And one spot I almost got doused with a 4-8 bomber that dumped right along. outside of me.
Does that aerial photo come out that far? How far out does that show?
Which?
This thing right here in front of me.
Oh, let's get that out. This is another freebie we found.
Oh.
Which way is up? I'll move the weights over. This is 49 and 99.
Mm.
And boy, have things changed.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't go that far out.
No.
Unfortunately, it doesn't.
Yeah, this doesn't apply to our area quite as much. Although, if you can tell me what this is, if you can figure out, number one, where it is, that's the hard part because the Hot Springs Road wasn't in yet.
That's the Steese Highway.
This must be Steel Creek, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, here's some kind of a military installation. Well, I assume. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tank farm at Birch Hill.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be right. Okay, that begins.
And this is all of their ammo dump back here.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would this be up here? That's just below Steel Creek. It's quite an extensive clearing, and maybe that's all it is agricultural.
Hmm.
But it shows up pretty clearly.
Yeah.
What shape is it?
It's just too long.
Long, narrow, east and west running. Irregular, they're not.
Where's the top of Birch Hill? Is it shown?
Oh, well, it's right here.
Birch Hill would be right here.
Mm-hmm.
That is about where that Camp Lee Walk would be. They had fields down in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about right. Here's the bottom.
And that little lake shows up there.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another pond over here. Might be closer to the one you were. What creek is this? Coming into and for that matter.
Mm. Yeah, that, evidently that's that creek that comes down, Columbia Creek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is that military stuff back in there.
Right, which
they've really changed it around a little bit.
Yeah, that's the same as this.
They've added a new one down below it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this must have been their missile storage area. This used to be ammo dumped in here, and then. That was our tank farm here, and the ski run. And they used to have another tank farm in here. That must be what these lines are. But that was closed up in the late 40s, early 50s. They closed that one down. And the garbage dump in that old gravel pit.
Every time I think of those pipelines there, I think of the restaurant I stopped at on the way to Haines. Some guy jokingly says, "What does lake trout taste like in Canada?" And some guy pipes up in the back of the room, what were the products they were hauling at the time?
Well, we had two grades of that, gas, motor gas, and diesel fuel. Mostly diesel fuel.
It would have been diesel fuel, and that's what fish taste like was diesel fuel, because they had all those leaky pipes on that string of lakes down in Canada.
How long were you down that part of the world?
Down at Tok?
Yeah.
I was down there in 50... Let's see. I guess it was 53, 54, or was it 54, 55? Because I bought a Nash Ambassador in 55. I was living down there then. I came back up here in 56 from Tok. but at that time we had our headquarters was in Whitehorse for the old Cano line. We had the 4-inch line from Skagway to Whitehorse, 2-inch line from Whitehorse back to Watson Lake for the airfield there, and the 3-inch line to Fairbanks, and then the 6-inch line to Norman Wells, which they took out about that time, closed down the refinery. But we worked that line until 55, when the Haines line was put in, and we closed out the old Cano line then and just operated the Haines Fairbanks line. And then I retired from it in 79, about the time they closed it down shortly afterwards, and just had the portion between Fairbanks and Eielson and tied into the refinery at North Pole. And now I understand they've closed that down and do everything pretty near by rail car or truck, because the amount of fuel is cut way down to what they used to do. During the height of the Cold War, we were putting 1,000 barrels an hour into Fairbanks, and they were burning jet fuel that fast.
Yeah.
Proven they could keep so many aircraft in the air 24 hours a day.
That sounds like a lot of pipeline, a number of miles.
Yeah, 623 from Haines to Fairbanks, and the old Cano system was quite a bit more than that. Of course, that was a 3-inch line up then.
Oh, something that, a name I've run into that you might know something of, have you ever heard of Zehnder Camp? I think it's Z-E-H-N-D-E-R, something like that. It's been mentioned in connection first with the FE company. In town, I assume it was someplace along the railroad just north of the of College Road, maybe over there where the buses are now or something. And then it's mentioned again in Neil Davis's book about his dad. His dad was a cook there during the war. The military had taken it over. And so it was at that time a military installation of some kind.
Yeah, that's where our office was.
Okay, it's short from this place. Knock that off. Yeah. Pull this down if it would be easier to see.
Let's see, where is that field? Is this Trainer Gate Road then? No.
Trainer Gate or College?
Well, that's College. Because here's Lead Field.
Yeah, what would this be right there?
Would that be the railroad?
Oh, very likely.
Yeah, well, that's almost Trainer Gate. This area right in there.
Yeah, that's...
Well, what was the name of that camp? It was a construction camp.
Signal Corps had a building or two in there for a while.
ACS. Yeah. Boy, I can't think of the name of it now. Birch Lagland Green was a construction company that had shops and stuff in there. BJL.
North Camp was
there? North Camp, yeah.
Well, I guess it's all the same one, but I've never...
Yeah.
You're the first person I talked to that even remembers, I think, that it was there.
Mm-hmm.
In any detail, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Why would it have that name?
I don't know, unless somebody named Zender homesteaded
it
there.
It might have been their homestead originally.
It should show up on this thing, because this is the whole school district.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple on there. Let's see.
Framers.
Framers.
But this one.
Yeah.
Birchill Cemetery. Derby Tract, Slaterville. They don't show anything. Well, they show that as Bentley's homestead.
Right.
Out in there. I think that was part of Bentley's
land. That makes sense that it would be, yeah.
Because they were running dairy cattle.
Well, of course, this is 53.
Yeah.
This is after the war.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at 53, that camp was still in there. It wasn't being used anymore. Well, there was a trucking company had using the shop buildings back there in the back part, but the houses had either been tore down or moved away by then, and all the barracks. There was a whole...
Yeah.
Two rows of barracks in there, and family housing up in the front.
Bentley's must have acquired it some way with the taxpayers.
Let's see. There was our station foreman, Howard Shore, Ray Skelton, Alan Smith. Most of them guys are all dead now that lived there then.
And they...
Canadian, what was his name?
They were part of this construction...
No, they were working as operators on the pipeline.
Oh,
that
okay.
was our headquarters in Fairbanks at that time. We didn't have anything out on the base except the fuel tanks on the hill. And then they built that shop down there at the foot of Birch Hill in the 50s.
I'm going to have to get a hold of Neil Davis.
Moved over there.
He's the one that uses that name in his book.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of that couple. One of their kids is still living in Fairbanks, Bob Peter. Did a lot of babysitting for them here recently. Well, not recently, because the kids are bigger now. Started with a Mac something or other. Yeah, Alan Smith and his wife just died a couple years ago. Howard Shore has been gone for quite a while. Ray Skelton. He was chief of police at one time
right.
in Fairbanks.
Lee Rissy mentioned him, had a a funny incident with him, but if I can ever get Lee to finish up his story, you'll enjoy.
Well, there were a lot of funny incidents with Ray Skelton.
Oh.
He bought a brand new John Deere crawler tractor, little dozer, and he had a place out on the Chena Pump Road out at the very end there by the river there, where the Chena and the Tannen all come together. And he was working out there different times, and he piling up brush and burning it. He had burnt these piles and the burnt logs. He kept pushing stuff up, and the log come up and knocked the air cleaner off his tractor. Well, he didn't think there was enough dust in the air to worry about. He run it and run it and run it. And finally it wouldn't run anymore. He took it in and want to know what he'd been doing. He said, well, he'd just been using it. Well, how long you had the air cleaner off? He says, oh, about a year. Well, you've run so much dust through it, it's bored the cylinders out so big, now we've got to go to 40 over. So he had to clean the cylinder walls up, then he used it again, and he started building the house and dragging logs up. And he had a pretty good high cliff there to drag the logs up and slide them over. Well, he pulls the log up there, and he jumps off, and he didn't get it out of gear, and it went over the cliff. It was just one thing after another.
Ray Skelton.
So then he...
Chief of police at one time.
Yeah, he came to work for us after he was chief of police, and we asked him, what did he know about police force? He said, nothing. He said, I just stuck around there. He said, I thought somebody would come along that knew something about it, but no one ever did, so he finally got out of it. And so then he, one day he came to work, and he said, the house burnt down last weekend while I was gone. And he just bought a new chainsaw, and he started to come to town to go to work, and then he remembered he left a chainsaw outside, so he went back, put it in the house, and he stoked up the stove and forgot to close the draft.
Oh.
So when he come back, the house had burnt down and his new chainsaw was gone. And it was a comedy of errors. And then, well, while he was police chief, he came home for lunch one day and took his gun belt off, laid it on the sofa, and him and his wife were eating lunch, and pretty soon they heard a shot. The kid had picked up the gun and killed himself.
Oh, geez.
So that was kind of a blow to their marriage.
Yeah, I think it was.
Then they adopted that native girl. I run into her once in a while in town here. It's been quite a while since I saw her, but she turned out to be a pretty nice person.
Hmm. Well, he sounds like he's what you might call accident prone.
Yeah. And he was the one that run a tank over there at the base one day, and the boss called him into the office. How can you sleep on the job? Well, he was trying to work on the job in the daytime and work on his homestead in the other part of the time without getting any sleep. So he went to sleep and run this tank over, and he was chewing him out about sleeping on the job, and he went to sleep, started snoring while he was talking to me. Howard come out and he says, what are you going to do with that guy like that? He said, goes to sleep while you're talking to him.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, back in those days, the co-op had a big root cellar there by the tracks where the club car was. Mm-hmm. Jim Gunning had the club car there at the time. And he used to store a lot of vegetables in there. Paul Albert used to raise a lot of cabbages and carrots and store them in there. We stored potatoes in there as well as the root cellar at home here.
Well, apparently a lot of people. Any idea, are there any records of the co-op left anywhere, do you suppose?
I don't know. I don't know who would have them unless, do they have a historical society in town?
They do, and yeah, it'd be worth asking them, I guess, because
yeah,
everybody out here that was out here early raised mostly potatoes and were involved in that.
Yeah, there were
some
carrots and rutabagas and cabbages mostly.
Well, Julie Wood talked about them raising celery.
Yeah, well, I don't remember anybody storing celery in there. I worked in there a couple of
different
years.
Yeah, they maybe sold it directly and that was it. But, how long did the co-op last? Any idea?
I don't know. It was in operation in 46 when I came. And then I started raising potatoes and started bringing them in there. Harold and I was working together on it. He had a few acres of potatoes down in front of his house. And I had that old ton and a half truck, and we used to haul quite a lot of potatoes with it.
And this was up over Steel Creek?
Yeah.
Boy, we've heard a lot of nightmare stories about the hill coming up off of the Steese.
Yeah, it was pretty steep, and quite a few people would slide off of it.
I take it there wasn't much of any gravel on it, or was there any?
Not originally. It was pretty slick when it was wet, and then, of course, when you got a snow, it was worse. And then they finally did gravel it pretty good.
This is interesting here. I wonder if that was an earlier route, or...
Well, that's Steese Highway there.
I'm off on Farmer's Loop, apparently. This must be, what, McGrath?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, yeah.
That's a different story entirely. Mm-hmm. I thought we were over here.
Yeah.
Louis Johnston, he was the guy that, what, was an electrician? Some kind? Had to do with the Winter Carnival ice carvings.
Yeah, he used to do a lot of the lighting and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And maybe also ran the projector at the theater, or had something to do with the theater?
Yeah, he might have. I forget who. Ann could tell you more about the theater, because her and Dorothy both worked as ushers there.
Huh, I don't think she mentioned that. That figures, but I don't remember hearing it.
Seems to me they did. Maybe I'm getting her confused with somebody else, but I thought they did.
This Reno subdivision is kind of interesting, because you notice Jane Reno, Ruby Rasmussen. Well, that was Jane Bushy.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure, because this is where their place was.
Yeah.
And then there's that little bit of Reno subdivision, which is now all those houses in there.
Yeah, that was where Kasolik built that house on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was interesting house, because that was built out of packing crates from the landfill dump.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of those boxes were, what, 20 feet long by 6 feet high and 6 feet wide. There was quite a lot of lumber in those. And they just hauled them boxes out to the dump. And if nobody hauled them off, they just burned them. There was a lot of lumber wasted there.
Well, people were allowed to use the dump in those days.
Yeah.
And then we're getting back to that now a little bit. Building material has always been prized stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the business manager that ran the Golden Valley?
Nick Item
built that house in college there where we lived for a year and a half.
Hmm, I didn't remember that. McCall's bought from him? Where Hotlicks is now.
Oh.
The house that used to be there.
Hmm.
Well, there are a lot of people using...
Well, Frank Stubbings had a house right there somewhere before they moved out here.
Mm-hmm. In fact,
other side of College Road, about there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Down a block or so. Yeah, it's now a little restaurant of some kind or another.
Right next to where, what's his name, put in that big building.
Oh, yeah, the...
Brand.
Yeah, the furniture. Well, it was building supply, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a building supply back then.
Yep. Bennett, John Jennings. Oh, the Woods. Julie Wood is one whose story we have, and that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. They were on Steel Creek Road.
Yeah, and they bought from... Patrick.
Yeah.
V.M. Patrick. What was that first name? Boric. Boris.
Boris Patrick. Yeah, and then he went to Galena.
Yeah.
And I was down there once when they were down there then.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Lee had a story about him and his... Oh, the Extension Service. The new firefighter had been told that Boris Patrick is a real friendly guy and a good one to stop in and talk to, and he got out there and got a very cold shoulder.
Mm.
Because they just shot an illegal moose.
Oh, yeah.
And later on, this all came out and it was okay. But oh, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stories.
Yeah, there were stories about some people that homesteaded way out there near there where the little eating place is now.
Oh, Skip's Cache or...
No, the one by the lake there. What is that, dinner
Two
house?
Rivers?
Two Rivers.
Yeah.
Just this side of it, on the other side of the road, the big family moved in there. They had quite a few kids. And Walter swapped hay and equipment with them a few times, and one time he went out there, and they had moose hanging in the barn that was going bad. And he made some remark about it. He said, you ought to take care of that. Oh, he says, no, he says, when it goes bad, we throw it away and go get another one. He says, we don't pay attention to seasons out here.
I'm sure they weren't the old ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
The farther you are from town.
Yeah.
Not a smart thing to do with the thing. Because just if anybody's dog can follow that odor.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a good nose.
Yeah.
A good nose, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, and then Harry Badger had quite a strawberry patch out on Badger Road back then, too.
Yeah.
Lou Joy's homestead.
Who is the guy on the corner of Miller Hill and...
Strawberry Joe?
Strawberry Joe.
Yeah.
What was Joe's last name?
I don't know that I ever knew, but I just remember that part. Yeah, Miller Hill and the old Nana Highway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You go right past it on the way to Nana.
Mm.
The railroad crossing there.
Yeah,
Yeah,
see, this map goes clear out as far as the school district went.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of...
I guess it's empty.
Well, there's more over there.
No, that's plenty, yeah.
See, clear over here.
Oh, Chena Pump Road. Esther, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here's Frank Dewey. Wasn't he up on top of Chena Ridge? The Deweys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dittman, yeah, they were up there. Oh,
yeah.
Here's Edby Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, he's got 360, it looks like.
He was
320.
He was early enough that he could have had that legally.
Yeah, well.
Okay, well that.
Kegler, Louis F. Kegler.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Kegler.
F.E. Company.
Well, what was she, a daughter of the family?
Pete?
Yeah.
No, she was the mother of the kids up here. She was, her parents were...
53, how old would she have been, though?
Oh, she was in her 20s, I would guess.
Okay.
Her parents were...
Well, right in here.
Big-time bankers.
Ray Skelton must have bought some ground from one of these places, but I thought he homesteaded. It was right in here somewhere, because here's the Chena and the down and on.
Yeah.
It might have been just below him, I don't know, because...
There was some university land put up for sale out in there.
No, this is F.E. Company here, there's school district up there. Torgerson's.
There's Neil Copenan and Heinz Borchard.
Mm-hmm. first, Nilo was the first people I ever saw that had their cattle in their house.
The Finnish operation, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they said the cattle helped heat the house.
Yeah, I guess.
15 years till you get out of a milk cow.
Yeah. Well, Ed Davis did that same thing over here on his place. He built that long thing and put the house on top of the upper end of it and had all the cattle, the sheep and the goats and chickens and pigs. And
okay, this is the property coming downhill at 4 Mile?
Yeah, right across the road from the igloos.
Yeah.
Then they started a children's home in there later on, too.
Okay. Oh, here.
Yeah.
Okay. Here comes Steel Creek, so he was down
this
a little bit. Well, that's interesting. We'd never heard about that.
Yeah, he had a long... I helped build it there before I got... when I was homesteading out here. He was running the co-op. He was a manager of the co-op at that time.
That's interesting.
And he had a truck and used both our trucks hauling potatoes.
So he was growing potatoes over there too, huh?
He started potatoes. I don't remember whether he was actually growing any right at that time or not. He was manager of the co-op. But he was clearing land after he built that house. And I think he did raise potatoes for a couple of years and then put it all into hay or something.
Boy, you'd never know it now, would you, when you look at that hill?
Everybody in the neighborhood here used to complain about, said that he was feeding dogs to his dogs, and he was getting stillborn calves from Kramer's Dairy, and the dogs were eating the calves, and everybody thought he was, the dogs were eating other dogs.
Cannibals, huh?
Yeah.
The Korean food, yeah.
Huh, so he was the manager of the co-op. No one's ever mentioned that. I don't think I heard who was who the manager was or didn't know.
Yeah, this was in 40, well, I don't know when he became manager. He was manager when I first got into it, and I got out of the service in 49, and I hauled a load of building supplies up for him from Spokane when I came back up the highway this summer of 49, and helped him build his house there and stuff.
Where would it have been in relation to, say, the children's home buildings
that are there now?
Yeah.
It was just a little closer to the road. That there's a small cabin there.
Yeah.
That is about where the original house was, and then it extended on down.
I guess what I don't understand is it looks like this would have been Love Road over here.
No, this is it here, I think. Yoder's came down here and came this way.
This suggested to me, because isn't... Oh, they aren't. No, they aren't right across from each other.
Mm-mm.
This is what, Juniper, where Juniper is now?
Yeah, that's where that
is. Oh, okay. All right, that figures. So it was that same property.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So yeah, they...
right there at the top.
Yeah, it was right in this corner. You just come right in there. And it was long ways this way. And then they built that house that's there now, the big one, over here. And when they were building that, they dug in there.
This was the children's home building?
Yeah.
What became that anyway?
Yeah. And they were going to pour the foundation, and we told them that the way they got it, it isn't going to work. And they said, why not? And I said, well, when you pour this concrete in that deep a thing, it's going to split out. They didn't have enough reinforcing for their forms, and they had the cut bank on this side, and they had the wooden form on this side without enough bracing. oh, it's going to be all right. Well, they poured it, and it blew out. They had a basement full of concrete. It took them a while to get that straightened up.
Okay, now who was building that? Was he?
I can't remember the name of the people that had that then.
This was the being built for the children's home then. This wasn't something else first?
I don't know whether they actually had children's home in mind when they built it or whether it became that afterwards. But it all happened about the same time. It was after Ed Davis had been gone for quite a while. And I don't remember the people's name anymore.
Let's see, that was called the Pentecostal Children's Home, wasn't it? And I guess we never knew any names of people there at all.
This Ed Davis, is this Ed B. Davis?
Yeah. Well, no, that was a different one. This Ed Davis is from Davis, California. It was a well-known family down there, and they had a big ranch. And after his parents died, he went back on that ranch, and I stopped to visit him one time afterwards. And he was getting, whether it was Alzheimer's or in loss of memory and stuff, and
well, I can identify with that.
But yeah,
and then where were you from?
California.
That's kind of what I remembered.
Yeah, I was born down in the oil fields down at Taft, down just southwest of Bakersfield, and then we had a ranch up in the foothills in Madera County there, about 30 miles from Yosemite Park.
Had your family been there for a while?
Yeah, Dad was one of the original surveyors to survey that country. He came down from Oregon, and he would come down and work on surveys for surveying out these home sites and homesteads. And then he'd go back up to Oregon, and he said the last time he went down, he didn't buy a round-trip ticket, and he couldn't afford to get one to get out again, so he just stayed there.
Oh.
And then his mother homesteaded a piece next door to him, so we had a 400-acre homestead there. Well, the 160 homestead that he homesteaded, the 160 his mother had homesteaded, and then he bought two other pieces of ground that people were going bankrupt on. So we ended up with 400 acres there.
This was Depression years, or getting into it at least.
Yeah, because he bought that 80 acres for $3.85 an acre.
Gee, imagine.
At a tax sale, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Where in Oregon were they from?
Around Prineville and in that area.
Central Oregon?
Yeah.
We used to hunt deer in that country.
Yeah, I think there's, I forget what all the different, I got a map and a history from one of my brothers that put together several years ago of that area in there and the different families, the Huntleys and let's see, my grandmother or great-grandmother was a Huntley. And then they all had homesteads in that area there. And that Huntley that was Huntley and Brinkley, that was a distant relative.
Grew up with Huntleys on the other side of the mountains, over in the Willamette Valley, but I imagine there were quite a few of them. Your soup about ready? You gonna stick around and have a bowl of soup?
No, I better get back over there. She wanted to do a few things. She's got physical therapy at 3:00.
Is this for her hip?
No, she's got both hips replaced now, and they're doing real good, but she's got that fibromyalgia. And she gets, I don't know, it's kind of a massage and exercise deal for that.
Goes into the hospital for this?
Yeah. Leah, I think is her name, the gal that works in there.
Well, that can sure help. I bunged up a shoulder here a few years ago, and